Rebag is a luxury resale marketplace. They have a curated collection of investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry. Each piece is carefully vetted and verified by experts. You can buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermès, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10.
Betches Media presents Diet Starts Tomorrow with host Aileen Drexler.
I'm having a relationship with my pizza.
In a world where wellness looks perfect on Instagram.
Just doing my workout. Tuesday's arms and back.
But feels anything but in real life.
Is butter a carb?
Yes.
This is the podcast exploring the emotional side of well-being.
I would be proud to partake of your pecan pie.
From people who understand the struggle.
I am on the third day of my cleanse diet.
Hello and welcome back to Diet Starts Tomorrow. I'm your host, Aileen, and oh my God, guys, this is my first time hosting solo. Sammy, I know you're listening and I miss you. And if you guys missed it last week, Sammy and I will still be co-hosting Back for Seconds, which is our subscription show. We release two episodes a month, so be sure to subscribe. So you guys might be wondering, now that Sammy's out and it's just me, what is going to change? And is Aileen just going to be talking to herself the whole time? I mean, like, yes, but no. Obviously, I'm going to have guests every week. We might have some reoccurring people come on to do segments. We're going to add back some really fun games and explore a lot more different topics. I know you guys have been wondering, oh, Aileen, you talked about downloading WW. Does that mean you're going to be talking about diets again? The answer is, for the most part, no, but it's not that simple. I'm a human. This is an ever-evolving journey for me, much like it is for you. Practicing intuitive eating has been transformative for me. I was in a really dark place at the beginning of COVID in March, you know, as lots of us were, spiraling emotionally, not knowing what the fuck was going to happen. And I was doing a lot of emotional eating while also trying to lose weight, which we know was just completely going to fail. And at that time, intuitive eating really, really helped me. It helped me heal my relationship with food. I'm not afraid to eat like anything, which is huge. You know, we had the discovery that you can have a sandwich with two pieces of bread. Holy shit. It gave me so much peace when I was pregnant too, which was so necessary for me at that time. And obviously, exploring body love and acceptance at every size is still work that I'm currently doing, you know, and I don't think that's ever going away. That's something that we're all going to be doing for the rest of our lives. That's why we're listening to this podcast. But since then, I did something I've literally never done before, which was have a baby. So I'm in a new territory and the stakes are different. The stakes are higher for me because my daughter's watching, and what I want to achieve for myself and what I want Mila, my daughter, to learn from me is some sort of balance. I want to know, what does it mean to live healthfully, both body and mind? How do you live a consistent, balanced, and fun? Fun is the key word. Fun life without going to extremes in either direction. And so that's my goal. And I hope you guys can come along with me on the ride. You know me. I'm always down for a serious, vulnerable conversation. But I also love having a good time. So that is what we're going to do here. This is a space that's open-minded. We are positive. We're fun. Where Diet Starts Tomorrow. So with all of that said, for my first guest, I wanted to bring on like the most requested guest of all time. He's been on a few episodes of Diet Starts Tomorrow. He's on our live show, which was so fun. And also in 2019, which is wild. We also haven't spoken to him since then. So please, everyone, welcome celebrity trainer, Insta star, and a huge fan of a big salad, Jordan Syatt. Hello.
How's it going? I can't believe we haven't spoken since 2019. That's crazy.
Isn't that crazy? Doesn't that seem like either, seems like both yesterday and maybe 5 years ago?
It really does. For me, it seems like it's just forever ago. Like it seems like a very long time ago.
It was BC before COVID. Like it was a different time. But here we are.
And you have the cutest baby ever, by the way, now.
Thank you.
Is, I love watching your stories. Like it's amazing. So a huge congratulations, Mazel Tov. That's just very exciting.
Thank you so much. And you were married also. Congratulations.
Thank you.
I have a lot of questions about what's your wife's name? are you allowed to share that?
I don't share that.
Is her name Nini?
That's like what we call it. That's like the
nickname. Okay. So that's like a joke that I didn't miss.
No. That's like her nickname. But we decided after a while of us dating, because so many people started asking what her name was, like, you know, that some people are crazy. Some people are absolutely out of their mind on the internet. So we're like, we want to keep it private. So when we first started dating, I noticed she was eating a lot of paninis. So I just started calling her Panini. And then like it went from Panini to Paniner to Neener. And now I just call her Nini. So now everyone knows her as Nini.
Okay. And do you call her Nini like also?
Oh, all the time. Yeah, on her birthday, that's her nickname. It's not a real name, but we decided together not to share that publicly.
And you also don't share what she does. That's also a running joke that I've caught on to.
That's a running joke where like I just make up the most outrageous things, like whether she's like an underwater pizza delivery person or like an underwater chess player or like an extreme ironer. And people, like a lot of people, it's so funny because when I share one, like I shared one where I forget there's a name for it, but you know the things that sumo wrestlers wear for their like their uniform? I don't know what it's called, but I said that she makes those sumo wrestling things. And the number of people who are like, that is so cool. Like, oh, my, how did she get into that?
Please tell us more about her craft. That's really funny. But congratulations. So you got married in like recently, right?
Yeah.
And it was a small, it was just you two?
It was just us. We went to Greece and we just got married, just us. It was great.
That's amazing. Congratulations. Also, congrats on saving a lot of money. that's a big deal. Yeah, I'm jealous.
But you've got a baby, which is so exciting. How is the baby? Like, does she sleep well? Like, what's going on with that? Like, I've been wanting to ask.
Oh, she's good. It's like a learning curve. Every day is something different. But, you know, we've gotten out of like the 3-month thing where you're like just very sleep deprived. And so I feel like more of myself, I have more energy, and that really makes a huge difference in like your well-being.
Yeah.
I'm never underestimating sleep again, like ever. It makes a huge, huge difference in like your mood, how like what you do, what you say to anyone. Like, it's crazy.
Yeah, it really is.
We're still catching up, but she is very sweet. But okay, I need to ask you, what is up with the jiu-jitsu? That is new.
Yeah, so I've been doing it. I started that in 2019. So I wrestled my whole life from when I was like 8 years old to 18 years old.
I can see that for you.
That's actually how I got into fitness. I'm super short, right? I'm a short Jewish dude, and I come from a very short Jewish family. And my mom wanted my brother and I to be able to defend ourselves because we're really short Jewish dudes. And so when I was 8 years old, my mom was like, I'm going to put you two into wrestling. And I didn't know what wrestling was. I just knew of like WWF style wrestling. So I was like, you want me to hit someone with a chair? And she's like, no, you schmuck. You're not going to hit someone with a chair. Like, it's Olympic style wrestling. And so I was like, I don't know what that means. But she put us into it and I fell in love with it. Like, wrestling was my whole life. I made varsity as a freshman in high school.
Oh, wow.
And so wrestling and jiu-jitsu are actually, they're very similar in some ways. And so I always wanted to get into jiu-jitsu. And so when I stopped coaching Gary Vaynerchuk and I finally had more time on my hands, I joined a jiu-jitsu academy in New York City called Henzo Gracie. I did that. I trained there, and then now we moved to Dallas and I'm training here in Dallas. I love it. It's been such a wonderful addition to my life. It's a great way to exercise and get fitness in while also chasing something that is outside of physique or a scale weight or something.
So I understand that is what you love about it, but like what do you love about the sport itself?
Yeah, that's like, a great question.
Versus other types of
sports. So I would say we could say a difference of we'll say other martial arts like boxing or Muay Thai or something like that, which I do enjoy and I've done those as well. But one of the great things about jiu-jitsu is I look at it very much from a self-defense perspective and like, God forbid something bad happens on the street. Number one is like over 90% of fights on the street, they end up on the ground, right? And even like if you're thinking of women's self-defense, like almost everything happens like on the ground or like when you're lying down, right? It's like it's not usually not standing where things are happening. It's when you're on the ground. And jiu-jitsu teaches you how to, the main thing of jiu-jitsu is if you're a smaller opponent, you're a smaller person, it doesn't matter the size of the person that you're going against, because you can use their leverages against them. And it's really, it makes it so that no matter your size, the fight is equal. And I love that because I'm a small guy, right? And so for me to be able to go up against, like when I first started, there were some young girls in there. There's a young girl named Vanessa at the academy I train at right now. She's 16 years old. This girl is a savage killer. Like I cannot, like she beats me every time because their technique is so much better than mine. The other thing I like about it mm-hmm. compared to like boxing or Muay Thai or anything like that, if you punch somebody, right, if you punch someone in the face or whatever, like that person is going to get really, really injured and you're also going to get injured. Like if you punch someone, you could break your hand very easily. There's no punching or kicking or anything in jiu-jitsu. It's all about controlling your opponent. And there's no striking. So I'm thinking again, in terms of self-defense, punching, kicking, you could get hurt, they get hurt. And oftentimes that's where lawsuits happen, right? Where it's like you end up hurting someone more than you intended to. With jiu-jitsu, you're just controlling them. You get them on the ground and you control them to the point where they can't hurt you, they can't hurt someone else, and they can't hurt themselves. So like, even if you have someone, they attack you on the street, you don't have to destroy them in order to control them. You can get them on the ground, you can control them, wait for someone to get there, and then take them into a place where they're protected, right? So it's they call it the gentle art, even though like it's really not that gentle, but because like it teaches you how to control someone in a way that won't actually physically harm them if you don't want to.
Wow. I actually didn't know that about jiu-jitsu, like that's the kind of the difference.
Yeah.
Between that and like other type of martial arts. I want to like learn some moves.
Yeah, go to Henzo Gracie right in the Midtown. It's amazing.
I moved. Did you? You moved too though.
Yeah, I moved. I'm in Dallas, Texas. Where are you?
Oh, that's where you went. I moved to Long Island. Not as far.
Okay, perfect. Congrats on the move.
Thank you. You too.
This episode is brought to you by Nuuly. Have you ever felt that fast fashion ick, but can't always find the super high-end stuff? I have a solution for you, Nuuly. Nuuly has everything you need to bring your closet up to speed for this season without breaking the bank. Free your closet of impulse purchases and skip the buyer's remorse by renting instead. Nuuly is a subscription clothing rental service. For just $98 a month, you get your choice of any 6 styles each month. Access to thousands of styles from more than 400 brands. There are no fees, late fees, damage fees, or fees to pause or cancel. They also have inclusive sizing up to 5X, as well as petite and maternity. And you always have the option to buy what you love. I love Nuuly. I've rented so many cute things from there, and I've even made a few purchases from there. And they're always spot on. They have so many brands that I honestly could never afford in real life. So it's great to be able to rent them. Nuuly is a great value at $98 a month for any 6 styles. But right now, you can get $20 off your first month of Nuuly when you sign up with the code DST20. Just go to Nuuly, that's Nuuly.com, and enter the code DST20 and sign up to get $20 off your first month. That's Nuuly.com, Nuuly with 2 U's, with code DST20. Nuuly subscription clothing rental. Change your clothes.
Okay, so speaking of your move, you moved in with Nini. How has that like sort of changed your habits, like healthy living or anything like that? Just like moving in with someone.
So we actually... we moved in together, I believe on May 15th, 2019 is when we moved in together. So we've been living together for several years now. We had a long distance relationship for like 2 years. She was living in Atlanta and I was in New York. And that was really difficult. One of the benefits of the long distance relationship is that when you're long distance, you're on the phone talking. And you really get to know the person. And like you, I think that's actually one of the greatest benefits of a long distance relationship is where if you really want to get to know the person, this is your opportunity. Mm-hmm. And then when you do see them, it's amazing and it's wonderful, but it's not clouded by the physicality of it. So mm-hmm. we did that for 2 years, which was, it was really difficult. It was devastating, but we made it through that. And then she moved to New York, she moved in, and within 6 months, I was like, yeah. this is it. It was like, basically because she was so great in the long distance relationship. In my mind, I was like, is this too good to be true? Like, is this like, I need to live with her to see if it's actually real.
Yeah, I agree with you. Yeah.
Within 6 months, I was like, you can't fake this. Like, you can't fake it when you're living with someone 24/7. And so then I proposed, and it's been wonderful. It's infinitely better than life was before her.
Oh, that's so sweet. So I noticed she like works out a lot. So like, does she ever say like there are benefits or like non-benefits of like living with a trainer? Do you comment on her form in like an annoying way?
I will never, ever comment unless she asks, ever. Because I had girlfriends in the past where I learned that mistake ahead of time, where like they'd be doing something and be like, no, 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 no. And then they would get mad at me to have a whole fight. And I'd be like, what happened? I'm just trying to help. So now I will only offer if she asks. She has an inner circle, obviously like a free inner circle membership. I'm not going to make her pay for that. She uses the app and she does all the workouts, but she's also super open-minded. She's like, hey, can you see if I'm doing this right and all that? And so I'll modify her workouts if she needs to or whatever. But only if she asks. I'm never going to be like, hey, right, you need to do this. But she'll ask pretty frequently.
Yeah. That's I can imagine either that's like funny or like annoying. Hey, your deadlifts. We got to talk about those. Okay, so you do a lot of Q&As. Lots of Q&As. Yeah. What is your most asked question?
Oh man. There are several most asked questions. The most asked question is, how do I know how many calories I should eat to lose weight? And they'll spell lose with two O's, which just infuriates me. And so it's how do I lose weight, or how many calories should I eat to lose weight? And then I have to correct the grammar there, or the spelling, but that's it. That's probably the most common one.
How many calories? And then you direct them to your YouTube video.
That's exactly right. Yeah. Yep.
What is the most asked question that's like shocking to you that people are asking or still think in a certain way?
I get a lot of questions about what are the best exercises for losing fat here, or, you know, like what exercise should I do to get rid of my love handles, or what exercise should I do to get rid of cellulite, or what exercise, like those, like what are the best exercises for
like
that,
spot training. Right?
Correct. How do I get rid of fat here? How to get rid of cellulite? And the cellulite one really gets me because I mainly work with women, and you know, a lot of women are very self-conscious of their cellulite, and who am I to be like, you shouldn't be self-conscious of this. But I sort of think about it from the perspective of balding is very normal for a vast majority, for a lot of men, right? Like, look at me, I'm freaking bald. I started balding when I was 18, right? Like, and I just shaved my head immediately. I was like, screw it. Like, I'm not going to try and use Rogaine or get a hair transplant. Like, screw it. This is normal. We need to, like, and I know this is like a big common phrase in 2021, like, we should normalize this. Like, cool, let's normalize balding, right? Because men bald, and even some women lose hair and go bald, right? It's like, it's common, it's normal. Cellulite is freaking normal. It is a normal part, and women, like 95% of women have cellulite. It's not something that you struggle with. You have it because it's normal. So like 95% of women have it. It's based on the structure of your skin. So that's why men often don't have it as much as women, although some men do. And so for me, like I really struggle with, like, well, number one, there are no exercises that's going to get rid of it. There's no cream or anything that's going to get rid of it. It's number one, let's normalize it. It's okay. You should have it. And number two is like, the only thing exercise is going to do is you can use exercise to get healthier. You can use exercise to get stronger. You can use exercise to improve your performance in something. You can use exercise to reduce pain in something. But using exercise to try and reduce fat in a certain area is not going to happen. And to try and get rid of cellulite or anything like that, it's not going to happen. So I think the more that we can just get used to saying like, hey, this is normal, it's part of being human, the better.
Yeah. I mean, the whole cellulite thing, I definitely agree with you. I mean, in terms of the balding thing though, we've as a society come a far way to like bald, like people are like, oh, that man is bald, he's hot. Like there's no like, oh, but then again, we also have like the dad bod is also like, oh my God, it's so hot. We don't really have that kind of like language for women. Like there's no like, oh, she has cellulite, that's hot. Like that's not a thing that people are like say in mainstream, like on social now, social media more, but like you don't hear men saying that. So therefore, I feel like women have a hard time accepting that fact that you can't change that about yourself for themselves. You know, like I don't think that that's as easy because we don't hear that from just people. Like we don't hear that from the opposite sex or just like we don't hear that. So I think it is refreshing to hear that from you. Also, like I see little dimples in skin in my baby and it makes me really appreciate my own body because it's like, wow, like I can't say one negative thing about her. Like how could I say negative shit about myself?
Yeah.
In terms of just like nutrition and, you know, you always were big on like the calorie thing, you know, has your mindset about anything like shifted? What's the deal with Syet Fitness? Like, do you have a different philosophy or is it pretty much the same?
No, I don't have a different philosophy, especially when it comes to weight loss specifically and calories. Like we could go through as many as like all the different fads that we want and da 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 da. It's like, no, if you want to lose weight, which by the way, if someone wants to lose weight, God forbid, it's totally fine. It's not a bad thing if someone wants to lose weight. I know we've gotten to a point in society where we have to clarify that, but if someone wants to lose weight, which is totally fine, they have to eat fewer calories than they're burning. And they don't have to count their calories. But whether or not you count your calories always count. So I don't care if you do intermittent fasting or if you do, I mean, keto is honestly, I think it's really stupid. But if you do that and you like it, fine. I don't care if you do paleo. I don't care what you do. But if you want to lose weight, you've got to be eating fewer calories than you're burning. And that's it. So from that perspective, my philosophy is exactly the same. I would say the biggest change that I've really had it comes in form of exercise, which I've been really banging on the cardio drum lately.
Yes, I wanted to ask
you've
you
seen
about
me
that.
Talking about that. So the strength and conditioning community that I've been brought up in since I was 14 has really, they've gone very anti-cardio, right? They went anti-cardio because, and when I say they, I also am talking about myself because I was sucked into that world. So I made this mistake. We went very anti-cardio because we realized, well, you don't need cardio to lose fat. And a lot of people, especially women, were going to the gym and we would call them like cardio bunnies. All they would do is cardio and no lifting whatsoever. And we didn't want that. They would do 2 hours of cardio because they thought that's what they had to do to lose fat. When in reality, it's like, no, if you get your nutrition in check and you lift heavy weights, like you will lose fat and you'll get more toned and defined and stronger and all that. But the fitness industry runs on a pendulum of extremes. So instead of just being like, hey, just do a little bit less cardio, we went to don't do any cardio, cardio is stupid, da 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 da. And that's including myself, a younger coach Jordan of like 8-10 years ago, which that was one of the biggest mistakes I made for sure. Because now, and I don't know how many of your listeners will know this, but in the strength and conditioning community, there were in the last 5 years, there have been some very, very big name and wonderful people in the industry who died from heart complications. And I'm not a doctor. I can't say, and they're like 40s, like 30s, 40s, 50s years old. They were not old. And I'm not a doctor, so I can't say, well, if they had just done cardio, right? I don't know their genetic history. I don't know any of that. But I do know that cardio is one of the most important things you can do for your heart health. And it's a completely different energy system to do like lower intensity, longer duration cardio than it is to lift heavy weights or even doing high intensity interval training, right? They're two completely different energy systems. And there is no doubt about it that having several days a week of even just walking or light jogging or swimming or cycling or elliptical or whatever for 30 minutes can do work. It's literally miraculous what it can do for your heart. And so this is really the drum I'm banging right now for people is it doesn't have to be either strength training or cardio. Let's get a little bit of both in there because you're going to get the best of both worlds from the strength, from the bone density, from like the physique improvements and the athletic improvements, but also for your heart health with the cardio.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, Good thing Instacart shoppers are just as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They're milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
So I wanted to ask you about like the low intensity versus the high intensity, which I think that you've been posting about, which I was really interested in. Like I've done, you know, Kelsey Wells and like the the sweat app, like they always,
I love her. She's great.
They've always like added in like lists into all of their workouts or into your weekly program or whatever. And I always thought, okay, whatever, it's cardio. Like I can go hard on the, like my bike for 30 minutes and that's my list, but my heart rate is going to like 160. So it's not really, I just learned this from your Instagram. That's not really low intensity. That's very high intensity.
No.
So what is the difference? And because I also read that it's different for everyone based on like what workouts affect your heart rate. How does list versus high intensity affect your body or your, let's say your heart? Or anything like that?
It's a great question. So if we look back at like in the 80s and 90s of exercise, we look at like step aerobics, right? Like that was like step aerobics, it was, which is like, it's relatively low intensity. Like, yeah, it could get higher, but it was a longer duration, lower intensity type of cardio. And people ate it up and it was great. But now with higher intensity training coming out, it's not that it's better, it's that what we've gotten to a point where we just always want something that we can do faster and get the results more quickly. That's what it is.
Yeah.
So the marketing for high intensity interval training is they say you get the same results in less time. The difference with high intensity interval training, to get to your question, is that anything above 150 beats per minute, and this is like a general number, but we'll call it 150 beats per minute, your heart is beating too quickly. So when you do a lower intensity cardio, which is generally what's known as zone two, and depending on your age and everything, it could usually somewhere between 110 beats a minute to 130 beats per minute, somewhere in that range, which doesn't feel like much.
For me, it's walking, yeah.
That's about walking.
Yeah.
When you do that for 30 to 45 minutes, that can actually lead to what's a lower resting heart rate. And the goal with this is as you get better with this, you can increase your intensity while keeping your heart rate lower. So when I first started, my zone two at about 130 beats per minute was level three on the treadmill, no incline. Now I can go level five on the treadmill with one incline and my heart rate is the exact same, which to me is mind-boggling. That's a huge difference. But now, so before where I was walking with no incline, now I can actually do a pretty like significant jog and my heart rate is still lower. And that's where you can see these improvements where your heart is becoming more efficient. And that's what we want to see with lower intensity cardio that you cannot get with higher intensity cardio.
Okay, so I have a few questions. Thank you for explaining that very well. So in HIIT though, it's interval. So you are going through intervals of low and high intensity. So during the low parts, aren't you fulfilling the zone twos?
Not necessarily. So one of the great things about, one of the things about zone two is it needs to be for a sustained period of time.
Okay. So that's
right? It's not just like a brief period, because realistically, if that's what you needed, you could probably sit down on the couch, watch a scary movie on Netflix, jack your heart rate up, and then right, and then you'd like theoretically get the exact same benefits, right? And that's not how it works. We know it's not just about purely heart rate, and it can't just be for a brief period of time. You want to sustain that lower heart rate for a longer period of time.
Okay, so how long is a workout at like a 120 beats per minute, like, or a walking or a light jog for someone?
So I would say if you're just starting out, maybe you are very out of shape for whatever reason, I would say number one, all you're going to need to do is walk, like probably leisurely walk, and you'll be there. So you don't need to worry about it. But I would say 2 to 3 times a week of 30 minutes is wonderful. Like that's a great place to begin. I think working up to 4 times a week of 30 to 45 minutes is a really great goal to strive for, but you don't have to start there at all. But that would be plenty for a very healthy heart. And then you could do that before your workouts, after your workouts, on your rest days. I mean, ideally, you're getting steps in no matter what. So even on a day where you're not working out, just go and get your steps in and you're trying to like get your heart rate somewhere between 110 to 130. You're going to be good.
Okay, so I have one last question. Maybe this is a loaded one before we go into listener questions. So knowing that there's the HIIT and then there's the strength training and now there's the lower intensity, how do you, and maybe this is something that you get when you join Inner Circle, but can you give us a little bit of advice here? How would you form somebody's like week of working out?
Yeah. Yep. So there's a couple things I want to say. Number one is I think the most important thing for exercise, the most important thing is that you can find something that you enjoy. That's the number one, like more than any, like, well, this one is optimal for this and this. Like the number one is you love it, right? And frankly, not everyone's going to love exercise, which like we have to appreciate. Not everyone's going to love it, but they have to do it anyway because it's good for you, because the alternative is that you're not going to be healthy and it's not going to be good for you or your family. But I think it is important to say not everyone's going to love it, but you still got to do it. It's not an excuse not to do it. But if someone is listening and they're like, but I love my HIIT, then cool, do your HIIT. You love it. Great. I don't care. Just do it because you love it. It's better than doing nothing. But I, now from a more like optimal perspective, one thing we have to cover here is a lot of people do HIIT because they're chasing the feeling of working hard. They're like, oh, I just love when I sweat like crazy and my heart's beating out of my chest and I can't even breathe. And I'm like, I mean, that's great if you enjoy it, but the same people are often not happy with their results. And I'm like, okay, so are you okay not being happy with your results in order to feel that way? Or would you rather go for something that's going to give you better results, but maybe not make you feel that high that you get from HIIT? And you have to make that choice. And the reason I bring this up is because a lot of people think, well, like the best athletes must be doing HIIT all the time. No. Not. If you look at the best athletes in the world, like Olympic athletes, professional athletes, depending on the sport, they'll do HIIT at most once or twice a week, at most. Like that, and I can't say this enough, at most once or twice a week for about like 12 to 15 minutes. It's not this hour long HIIT class. That's not what they're doing. And so I'm always like, what would make you think this average Joe or Jane think that you need more HIIT than a high level professional athlete? That's just, it's asinine. You don't. And it actually can do more harm than good. We see a lot of people getting injured and burnout with too much HIIT. So in terms of structuring the weekly programming, what I would do is I would say, 2 to 3 days a week of strength training. I would say if you want to include HIIT on one or two of those days, I would rather you do it on a strength training day because you're actually using the same energy system. It's the same energy system with HIIT as with heavy strength training. So we'll say 2 to 4 days a week, but at least 2 to 3 days a week of strength training. And if you want to include HIIT on one or two of those days, you can for 8 to 15 minutes max. That's all you need. Other than that, you're just going to get diminishing returns. And then on all the other days, do some lower intensity cardio, whether it's walking, light jogging, swimming, cycling, elliptical, rowing. I don't care what it is. Just move. Just walk. Even realistically, some type of vinyasa flow and yoga will probably get you to that like 120 to 130 heart rate zone. Like that's one of the great things about yoga is you're depending on the type of yoga, you're constantly moving.
Right.
You're always going. So that's another way to get your zone two in. It doesn't just have to be walking or jogging on the treadmill, which can be boring as all hell, but like find something in which you're always moving at a somewhat lower intensity that you enjoy and you're going to be set.
I love that. I feel like that's a very clear answer. For the strength, are you doing like legs one day, arms, upper body, another day, I don't know, push, pull one day, you know, what do you say?
My preferred is, if I'm training 4 times a week, I will do, so I'm going to get, I'll give you
no,
3 and 4 times a week. Cause like I'll do the 4 times a week.
2 to 3.
4 times a week as I use an upper lower body split. So for example, Monday would be lower body, Wednesday would be upper body, Friday would be lower body, Saturday would be upper body. That's a 4 times a week split. That's my personal favorite for 4 times a week. For 3 times a week, a lot of people go towards full body every day. And I hate that. I think it's a really terrible way to go about it. Because if you do full body every day for 3 days, you're never, number one, going to get full recovery of your muscles. And you're never going to be able to lift as heavy as you could or as intensely. It's always going to be like a lower to moderate, and you're never going to be able to reach your full potential. And you're going to be sore all the time. So I would actually prefer for 3 days a week, something like day one is lower body, day two is upper body, day three is full body. And so that's what I would prefer. And usually like Monday, Wednesday, Friday, or Monday, Wednesday, Saturday, some type of a split like that. For 2 days a week, that's when you could do full body. So I would say maybe like Monday full body and Thursday or Friday full body. And that would be plenty.
This is great. And how long should they be doing these strength workouts? Like 30 minutes or like an hour?
So it really depends. If you're the type of person that will, in between sets, be on your phone and chit-chatting and FaceTiming, whatever, like, and I'm not going to say don't do that, because if you're in the gym and working out, great. But like, maybe an hour 15 at most, realistically. Yeah. But if you're in there and you're paying attention to your rest periods and you're not dilly-dallying or whatever, you're not lollybopping around, like 30 to 45 minutes is plenty. I would say if it's taking you less than 30 minutes, you're probably not taking enough rest and you're not lifting heavy enough. If you're in there in and out in 20 minutes on a regular basis, and you're sweating like crazy and your heart's going, like, you're not lifting heavy enough. You need to slow it down, lift heavier, and take like 75 seconds to 90 second rest between sets so you can actually recover and lift heavier weight.
Thank you for that. I think the reason why I'm kind of asking and like really prying a little, because, you know, now that everybody's kind of at home and at-home workouts are the sort of way that everybody's working out, it's harder to just start and know how to work out at home. Like where, what do you do? Like everybody's just doing either full body or just doing spin for 30, you know, like there's no direction. Even with all these like libraries of classes, like you don't know how to plan your week. And like you said, sure, if you enjoy it, that's really all that matters. But it's kind of hard. Like you're just like, okay, but what am I working towards? I want to actually make a difference in my body. So,
you know, home workouts, just speaking from personal experience, they can just be so dreadfully boring. Like my eyes are bleeding from doing it. It's like, because they're so repetitive, right?
Yeah.
It's like, how many burpees can you freaking do? You know, it's just like, oh God. And I hate burpees with all of my heart. I hate burpees. And I rarely ever program them because there's so many other better options. But
when you're
doing home workouts, like you're limited by your body and what you can do with your body, right? So if you're relatively new to this and you're like, well, I can't even do a push-up, you might think, well, what's the point? Well, number one, you can always alter that. You can always do push-ups with your hands elevated or do push-ups on your knees. But for me, I don't care if you're doing home workouts or at the gym or whatever. One of the best ways to get motivated to really do it is to have some type of a goal. But for example, if you can't do a push-up yet, but you can do push-ups with your hands elevated on the windowsill, then say like, all right, your goal is going to be to do like, I don't know, 25 push-ups a day, or to get to the point where you can do one real push-up on the ground, like one straight push-up, mm-hmm. right? And so having a goal like that, or having a goal of being able to goblet squat a certain amount, or being able to do X amount of lunges, like have a goal that is something you can look forward to, that you can strive to. Because if you're just exercising to exercise, frankly, often isn't enough for most people. You have to have a specific goal of what you'd like to achieve, to have almost like a little competition with yourself, because that's what we really thrive on. That's what's going to motivate you.
Mm-hmm. The thing about the push-up is so true. Like I used to be able to do like so many push-ups, like so good, like really slow and clean. And then like fast forward to years and here I am postpartum trying to literally just do like even a cobra, you know, off the ground, and I am sore for 3 days. So that you really can't discount like the amount of kind of work you need to do before you get to the big push-up, you know? And it does take like real work. Like it's a real workout to do the knee push-up, the one against the wall, a fucking cobra.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Someone asked me in my Q&A yesterday, and I didn't answer it, so I'll answer it here. I just get a lot of questions. But someone was like, I've been working on getting a full push-up for 3 months and I still can't do it. Like, what's going on? And I wanted to be like, that's normal.
Yeah.
Like it takes a while. Like this is, and the cool part is once you get the first one, this is for both chin-ups and push-ups. Once you get the first one, The other ones just come on much more quickly. But it's very difficult. You're pushing up or pulling up your entire body weight. It's challenging. It's for most people, it takes longer than 3 months to get. And it's just that's part of it.
Oh, yeah. Okay, I have a few listener questions because people were very excited. And yes, people wrote in when we asked for people to, if they have questions for Jordan, a lot of you just literally just said yay because he was coming on the show. So we appreciate that. But some people had questions. So talking about like workouts and all of this COVID, post-COVID, in COVID, whatever. Question one, where do I even begin? I need a total reset and mind shift.
I would love more context, right? I think there are several places we could say where they should begin, right? We could start with the mental side of it, right? It's like if you need a whole new reset and like, you know, ask yourself, why are you doing this in the first place? Like, what do you want to do? Are you going after the same goal over and over again of like, I don't know, losing the last 10 pounds? Or is it, are you like struggling with exercising consistently? Like ask yourself, like, why are you doing this? And I think that's one of the most important things. Like, why is this important to you? And for most people, like, let's say it's something about losing the last 10 pounds. I think losing the last 10 pounds is massively overrated, where it's like, how will your life be better from losing these last 10 pounds? Because there's going to be a cost to losing those last 10 pounds. And that cost is going to come from being more restrictive with your diet, maybe not being able to enjoy yourself out with your family and friends as much, maybe not being able to enjoy your weekends as much, right? So if it's the last 10 pounds, maybe switch your goal from trying to lose those last 10 pounds to trying to get your first push up or your first chin up or improving your mile time or going to yoga more consistently, whatever it is.
So that goes into my, or not my question, but a listener question. How the fuck do I stay consistent in working out and my diet?
It's a great question. And there are many sort of avenues we can go down. But first and foremost, most people who struggle with consistency equate consistency with unyielding rigidity, right? And so, and basically what that means is like their idea of consistency is every single day, 7 days a week, I need to be literally fucking perfect with my nutrition and my exercise. And I need to do this. I need to do that. And I need to get at least 10,000 steps. I need to do my workout. And I can't have any quote unquote bad food. And as soon as they do go off that ridiculous fucking plan, then they think they are inconsistent and they ruin their progress. And then they, of course, they quit and they're no longer consistent because they think they ruin their progress. And it's not because you ruined your progress. It's because you set yourself up to fail from the beginning by thinking that consistency meant perfection. Perfection, not to mention like working out every day and eating literally perfectly, that's not perfection. That's stupid. That's just a bad idea. It's not healthy. And actually research shows consistently that flexible dieters and people with more flexible lifestyle are significantly healthier than people with a rigid lifestyle in regard to health and fitness and nutrition. So you have to understand consistency might start with working out 3 days a week and like 3 days a week of strength, and then other days of just movement, just walking. That would be your consistency with exercise. And nutrition, I try and be like 80% consistent. If there's 31 days in a month, then you should be consistent for 24 to 25 days that month. That's 80% consistent, which gives you about like 4, 5, 6 days of like, hey, you're not consistent with. Maybe you go out on a weekend and you completely, you know what, screw it, I'm just going to eat more, whatever it is, like you enjoy yourself. But if you want to be 80% consistent, about 24, 25 days that month, you should be on point. And realistically, let's say you're 50% consistent. Well, if you got a 50 on a test in school, like you fucking failed, right? So like if you're 50% consistent with your nutrition over the course of the month, then you don't deserve to be upset with your lack of progress.
Yeah, I think that's good advice. The mental shift is also really important. And like you said, like not being so rigid, but the like being obsessive is also not helpful for consistency because like taking it seriously. Yeah, sure. Because these are your goals, but not taking it like, oh my God, this is the end of the world. That type of mental shift, like just being like, all right, so, you know, whatever, like that's not the end of the world. Like, I'm just going to move on with my day. I had a nice day. Like, That's it. Okay, so I had too many chocolate chips. Okay, who gives a fuck? It's kind of like just being a little, just like so much easier on yourself. And I think that like just kind of applying that, like just being nice to yourself helps with consistency. I mean, not being like mad or feeling guilt about that is the key to not really doing it again. And I think that also helps with consistency. And that's sort of how I'm going into this year as well.
I like that. You know, you said something, just being nicer to yourself. And that's, I've seen that. It's a big common theme in the last few years, which I think is important. You got to be kinder to yourself. But I also think about it from the perspective of you have to be nicer to yourself, but nice, but firm, right? So like you have to be like, so nice to yourself in terms of, cool, you had too many chocolate chips. Cool. Did you enjoy them? I hope so, because they're fucking delicious. So great. Like, I hope you enjoyed that. But now you have to be firm and say, so you enjoyed them. Now let's get back on track. Let's not use that as a justification to like, well, now I'm going to go eat the entire pumpkin pie and I'm going to go eat all the Chinese leftovers in the fridge, right? It's like nice to yourself with what you did, but firm moving forward.
Well, what I mean is just being a little bit more like anthropological, like understanding like what's going on rather than fuck you, like you just ate that chocolate chip, like you yeah, kind of just exactly. went out, you did too, like you're doing something like that you normally wouldn't do, like something must be going on. Okay, let's explore that instead of you can't do that again because you'll do that again.
Yes, exactly.
So like it's correct. Really just kind of being a little bit, just giving yourself like space for the kindness, because you wouldn't like, you're not yelling at your friend if they did that. You'd be like, oh, what was going on then? Like, are you feeling okay? Like that kind of nice, I think, is what I mean.
Yeah. Yeah, I completely agree.
Okay. In what instances would you be in favor of intuitive eating?
I'm a big, big fan of intuitive eating for people who are struggling with disordered eating. For people who are really struggling with binge eating, with some type of disordered eating. Absolutely. My issue, it's funny, I don't have an issue with legitimate intuitive eating. I have an issue with what the fitness industry has turned intuitive eating into, what they've made up intuitive eating into, right? The actual intuitive eating book and what is outlined as intuitive eating, I don't have an issue with that for people who have issues with food and have disordered relationship with food. My issue is for the people who say, well, I'm going to use intuitive eating to lose weight. And I'm like, well, hold on. That's not what the fuck it is. And like you've already botched it. Like before you've begun, you've already botched it. And a lot of people in the fitness industry and people who don't know better, they're like, well, I'm going to lose weight intuitively. No, you're not. Like it's not how it works. So that's the issue I have with it. I don't have an issue with the book. I actually think it's wonderful, and they have many amazing and scientifically backed strategies to improve your relationship with food. The question is like, are you trying to lose weight? Because if you're trying to lose weight, intuitive eating is not going to work. Like that's not what you should be doing. You should be doing something.
No, you have to be okay with potentially gaining weight if you're doing intuitive eating.
Correct. That's exactly right.
Actually, one last question. What Hogwarts house are you and your wife in? That's an actual question.
Well, so I don't know what she is. She's never like taken the test. I can tell you what I think. So I've taken, in my heart, I've taken the test.
Is that what you just said?
I'm such a Harry Potter nerd. Like they have tests online. So in my heart, I'm a Gryffindor. In my heart, I took the test online and it said I'm a Ravenclaw, which like, I don't know. Because I was in special education growing up. I'm really not that smart. So like, but who knows? Like it said, I'm a Ravenclaw. I don't necessarily think that. I think I'm more of a Gryffindor. And the Sorting Hat says like, you know, you can choose sort of. And he takes your choice into account. So I think I'd be Gryffindor. But.
It's intuitive.
I think my wife is a Ravenclaw.
She's a Ravenclaw. Who is in Ravenclaw again? Which one?
Well, none of the main characters were in Ravenclaw.
None of them. Main character. Okay.
No, Ravenclaw is like seen as it's like, so Hermione was between Gryffindor and Ravenclaw. It's like the most like, it's very intelligent that is in Ravenclaw.
Oh, I see. Did you watch the reunion?
Of course I watched the reunion. Yeah, it was, I had that big lump in my throat. I was like almost crying several times, especially like watching Robbie Coltrane. Like, oh, it was so good.
My favorite part was the crush that what's his name? I don't Hermione remember anybody's name. Hermione and Malfoy,
yeah,
like
I
having each other,
it.
Like they need to get together in real life. If not, if they haven't already, they're in love.
I love the story because her story. She was like, "Yeah, we were in a class, and the teacher was like, draw what you think God is. And he drew a picture of a girl on a skateboard with a backwards hat and she fell in love with him right there. I was like, that's really awesome. Like, I love that.
That's so awesome. And she was excited to see his name on the call sheet. It was just like, and then did you see how like vulnerable he was? He's like, and I still have a soft spot for her. I'm like, propose. What are you doing? This is Ross and Rachel.
Yeah, it's so crazy. It really gave a completely new insight into the movies and the characters. Like when they were like, yeah, you know, we're all little kids, we're having boyfriends and girlfriends and breaking up with each other. I was like, oh my god, that must have
it
been
was
crazy.
So cute. It was really cute. Well, that is it. Thank you so much, Jordan, for joining us today and being my guest on my first solo episode. And Jordan's going to be back for our Dear DST episode this Thursday. He's going to share his non-scale wins. It's going to be amazing. And remember to email us, dst@betches.com. Follow us at Diet Start Tomorrow. Follow Jordan at Syat Fitness. Every time I look for your Insta, I look up Jordan, not Syat Fitness. And
I've tried to change it, but it won't let me. And I think I don't know if it's because I'm verified or what, but it won't let me change my name.
I'll help you call Insta. And you can follow me at Aileen. And we're always with you
through thick and thin.
Diet Starts Tomorrow is produced by Sean Kilby, Stacey Wong, and Jorge Morales Pico. Editing by Stacey Wong. Be sure to follow at Diet Starts Tomorrow on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. And send us your emails to dst@betches.com. Betches.